Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. There is so much upheaval and division in the world right now, and it's wonderful to be able to talk with two guests who are polar opposites in terms of their political views, yet great friends who took a 20,000-mile road trip across America to learn what things can bring us together in this time of strife and partisanship.
Our guests are Jordan Blaschek, a staunch Republican, and Christopher Haw, a true blue Democrat. The result of their 44-state journey is a fabulous new book called Union, A Democrat, A Republican, and A Search for Common Ground. Jordan and Chris, we thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us. And I'm so glad that was recorded. That was the best introduction to the book I think we've heard.
So now you can save it.
Yeah, you're hired.
Great. Tell us how you two met and how your friendship evolved, because on the surface, you seem like polar opposites who might not have a lot in common.
Yeah, it's a great question. So Chris and I met in 2015, when I had just left the Marine Corps and Chris had just left the State Department. And we met at a graduate student bar and kind of immediately struck up this great friendship. At the time, all that seemed to separate us were our hairstyles, where I still shaved my head like Marine and Chris has a ponytail. And we found that we bonded over these great long discussions about books and literature and history and what we wanted to do with our lives. And then slowly, as the 2016 election approached, we found that our great conversations just kept getting derailed by politics. And we were sort of shouting at each other and leaving red in the face after stomping away from one another. And that was kind of the early friendship that took root.
Can I just quickly say it's a man bun, not a ponytail. It's been 4 years. Thanks, Jay.
Now, how did the idea of the road trip come about, and what did you think was the purpose of it? Or maybe it just evolved along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, the first road trip was really just a lark. Jordan had a job in Los Angeles he needed to get to at the end of the school year. And my job in DC didn't start for 2 weeks. So one day we were, apparently this is part of our story. We were at a bar and he looked over at me, kind of slapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, do you want to go on a road trip?" And I said, "Why not?" You know, we had been fighting about politics already, but we were fast friends and it seemed like something to do. I mean, you know, growing up in Berkeley, everyone's done a cross-country road trip. I mean, once Jack Kerouac did it, it seems like everyone of a certain generation wanted to do it. And my mom has been across the country, seems like dozens of times. So it felt like it was time. You know, I was 27. It's time to do it. So the first ones were really a lark. And it wasn't until maybe our second and our third trip that we actually started to think, hey, you know, these trips are so beautiful. Our conversations are so deep. We're learning so much. Maybe we should do something with this.
And so why did you decide that a book might be something that you would do with it?
Yeah, well, originally we had this great vision of doing a documentary, and I think we even wrote up a treatment for it.
Yeah.
And realized at some point that we have zero artistic talent and no ability to film. And so defaulted to a book, since both of us are writers and we originally bonded over our love of writing.
This is a really basic question and one that I feel strange asking you guys, because I feel like I should know more about politics than I do. What do you each see as the biggest fundamental differences between Democrats and Republicans? What makes you guys most passionate about your sides?
That's a great question. I think that might be one of my favorite questions I've ever gotten. you know, I think we, deep down, I think Chris and I believe that Republicans and Democrats all want the same thing. We all want a better society. We want people to have more opportunity. We want everyone to have health care. I think fundamentally the difference between Republicans and Democrats, as I've seen it, is Republicans care a lot about kind of maintaining the benefits of what's come before. So they look at what we've inherited and they see kind of the virtues of the system, and they want to make sure that in the pursuit of progress that we don't lose what we've already gotten. And we want to make sure that things like culture, individual liberty, all these things are protected as we advance towards whatever society we want in the future. And I think on the left, there's a sense that, you know, we see a lot of the failings of the current society and we want to fix them, and we want to fix them now. And it's not something we want to wait for. And so we're going to move forward using things like government as a tool in order to do that. And often that sort of philosophical difference underpins a lot of the like tactical debates we have over specific policy issues.
Chris, how would you answer that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jordan nailed it. I will add though that there's a deep complexity to how both Democrats and Republicans look at this country, and it's very hard to put us all into large buckets. I think Jordan did as good a job as possible, and that was one of our first insights on the road. And it's why we wanted to write this book. You can't go look at, say, a Trump supporter and say, I know everything about you. Or, you know, look at a long hair from Berkeley like myself and say, I know exactly what policies you believe in and how you want to accomplish them. But what we do find, and this was the second insight in that pattern, is that we do all want the same things. We share a lot of the same values, whether it's a desire for second chances, dignity, liberty, freedom, opportunity. I mean, we use the same political language no matter who we are. So I love Jordan's buckets, but I do think it's a complex question. And I think starting it from the perspective of I don't know enough about politics is the right place to start. That's where we've learned to start, is this kind of questioning of you know, what do you think? You know, how did you come to this perspective? And that's a big part of this union project as well.
And tell us more about the conversations that you got into and how you documented them on these road trips. I mean, were you recording the conversations? How did you do this?
Yeah. So early on, we didn't plan on a book, so we didn't record anything. And some of the early fights that we document in the book were in part recreated from memory. And we would learn and talk and wrestle with like, well, I think you said that, and no, I said it this way, and we would kind of recreate them. And I just told Chris recently that I would actually reread our fights when we were going and recreating them, and get annoyed all over again at the argument. So I was secretly angry at him. But then as the trips went on, we knew we were going to actually write a book. We then started recording a lot of our conversations, and especially anything that involved other people, so third parties. Those were all recorded, or we took notes.
I will say it's amazing how easy it is to remember a fight about politics. However, it's like it was yesterday, and reading it brings back some emotions. But it also, what Jordan just said, explains a lot of sort of snipey phone calls we had in 2019.
That's amazing. A lot of our early fights in 2015, 2016 were over things like police brutality, kneeling for the flag, Black Lives Matter, climate change, all these things that are popping up again and are so urgent today were all the things we were fighting about when we first started this project.
Do you feel, each of you, like you're as firm in your political beliefs as you were when you took the first road trip as you are now, after having spent so much time together?
Yes and no. It's a complicated answer. No, in that Jordan has helped me understand the intricacies of a lot of these issues that I thought were quite simple at the beginning of our trips. Whether that's our sort of theory of change and progress and the importance of tradition and the importance of having some friction and deliberation built into how we move forward, or whether it's just seeing different sides of issues like the ones that he just pointed out, whether it's police community relations, climate change, that's a big one, or other sort of larger headline grabbing issues. Although the answer, though, is also the fact that we are still a liberal and a conservative, a Democrat and a Republican. I like to say that Jordan has made me a better liberal in many ways. And that's,
argue your points more?
Exactly. Yeah. He would bring data that I had never considered, and arguments I never considered, and information and new ways of looking at all of that. And that allows me to sort of fill my blind spots, adapt how I talk about it. My beliefs are my beliefs, but Jordan is a brilliant guy. And if you don't listen to people who have different worldviews, then you have, you're poorer for it.
It's nice to do podcasts with your best friend because he talks you up on it.
What are the most, if you each had to pick like one pivotal, important point during this 44,000 mile journey over 3 years, what would it be for each of you?
Wow, that's a really good question. Jordan, what do you think?
I think my answer would be we spent a week in a long haul truck with this man named Pete Mylan. And Pete is this larger than life man. And first time we met him, he was wearing a Make America Great Again t-shirt. He has this huge hearty laugh. He's very irreverent. And over 5 days on the road together, I think every preconceived notion we had about Pete going in of what he would believe, how he would act, were proven wrong. And he turned out to be one of the sweetest, kindest, most thoughtful people we'd ever met. And he was kind of self-taught politically, but he had a range of views, none of which you would have been able to guess from knowing that he was a Republican or a Trump supporter. And just in having that experience with him, I think it made us much more humble about what we believed about the country and gave us this insight into a profession that is so fundamental to the way we live, and how this man, Pete, who was working it, more than anything else in life, just wanted to have a sense of dignity and to provide for his family. And in the end, we think that's true for almost every American, that most of what we want is just to be able to provide for our families, to make sure they're taken care of, and to have a sense of dignity in what we're doing in life. And Pete just drove that home for us in spades.
Chris, what's your thought?
Yeah, I'd say it was our second visit to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Ultimately, this is a book about hope. And we landed on that conclusion after having had to reconcile both sort of Jordan's optimism for what we'd find on the road and my skepticism about what we'd find. When we left, Jordan said, look, we're going to find evidence of America's renewal, America's spirit everywhere we go. And I was more convinced we were going to see the problems. I said it's hard to look at the headlines these days and not feel like we're about to walk into a country in decline. And what we found was that there are people willing to work every day as hard as they possibly can to create a more perfect union, to improve their lot and the lot of their community. And that is true no matter how difficult our history is in certain circumstances. And this was really driven home to us in Tulsa, which has a very complicated racial and socioeconomic history. In 1921, there was the race massacre when a mob of largely white individuals descended on Black Wall Street, which was at that point the wealthiest Black community in America, and sacked it. And despite this, and despite continuing issues of segregation and poverty and inequality, there are people throughout Tulsa who care deeply about that community, want to talk openly about what has happened in their history, and build a community for everyone. And it was in that moment where Jordan and I really said, you know what, this is where our hope comes from. And the way we look at hope is that it's an active belief. Optimism in our approximation is the belief that things will get better no matter what. And to us, hope is things will get better if we work at it. And we came to that conclusion in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. What are you guys most worried about in the upcoming election? Because so much has changed, certainly in 2020, that you guys may have different concerns.
Yeah, I think my biggest fear going into this election is that we've distanced ourselves from the other party to such an extent that we view the other side as a mortal threat. Republicans view this election as existential, and I think Democrats view this election as existential. And it makes me very nervous when you have that whatever happens on November 3rd, it's going to be combustible, and we might go through months of conflict over who the actual president is, or people not wanting to accept the results of the election. And one of the amazing things about America is that we've had this unbroken, except for 4 years, this unbroken series of transfers of power every election, and we've done so peacefully. And when it gets this existential, it makes me very nervous that we won't be able to come together at the end and say, this was a noble fight. We had our fight, and now we're one country. And that worries me.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah, it might be a different side of the same coin, but I'm worried that we're not going to be thinking about unity on a rhetorical basis. I say that as a recovering speechwriter. I'm worried that instead of trying to grow the tent, both parties will try to bring out their base exclusively and forget that the president needs to have a unifying message, needs to be able to speak to people no matter where they are and who they are. And I fear that in this climate that it's easier to just bring out your base. And I hope we don't lose track of the site that you have to set a vision going forward, and you have to have that vision be accessible to everyone.
Do you guys think that regardless of who wins, eventually we are going to be okay and become unified again at some point?
I do. I have a strong belief that we will come together at some point. It might take time, and mm-hmm. it won't happen on November 4th. But I think there's this deep well of feeling among the American people where they really want to be unified in one country. It's borne out by polls. There was a poll by this great group called More in Common, asking people how their views had changed after the pandemic. This was about a month ago. And it was on issue after issue, they felt more dissatisfied with things across the country, whether it was the national leadership, the response to the pandemic, their views on race. It was just one issue after another. People felt worse. And then the very last question asked, do you want a leader who can bring us all back together? And it was 94% said they do. And that's a staggering number. I've never seen something that unifies people to that extent. And it could just be that when asked, people are of course going to say they want to be brought back together. But on the road, we heard over and over and over again from people who were sick of the division. They were tired of being, in their view, manipulated apart. And dragged apart by sort of the parties or the media or some other force, and they really want to come back together. And if the feeling is that strong across the country, I think at some point we will have someone who can help us come back together.
Can I also add, I think unity is a mission statement. I think we have to ask the question, unity for whom? And I think finally we have a chance to have unity for all Americans. And it's a process. It's a historical process. I mean, John Lewis, who unfortunately just passed away, has been fighting for unity since the day he died. So I think it's a mission statement. It's something that we aspire to. And like Jordan pointed out, I think there's a deep, deep desire to recreate it in a new way, in a 21st century way. And I do hope that with everything we've gone through in 2020, that we'll see this crisis as an opportunity to do exactly that.
Is it your sense that America is a much more complicated place than you thought it would be, or is it really a much simpler place after this 44,000 mile trip, or trips, as it were?
I mean, underneath it all, I do believe that fundamentally most people want the same things, and I think that makes it seem more simple. But I'm just blown away by the complexity. I would have to go with more complex. Not only is this country so diverse along racial lines, class lines, just geographically, and there's so many different ways of living, so many different life experiences. Jordan referenced Pete earlier. I mean, just one man wearing a Make America Great Again shirt, which sort of, is his equivalent of putting his hand up and saying, this is what I believe, could talk for hours and you'd still be sort of parsing out the complexities of his views. So I think it's far more complicated, and I think that's a beautiful thing. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of Jordan and I's relationship. I mean, the more complex we are and the more opportunity we have to talk to one another, the better able we will be to understand this really complicated modern world we live in. So I'd say more complex, even though I wonder if Jordan would say it's more simple.
No, I agree with Chris.
Interesting.
I love that. I love that.
Chris and Jordan, the three of us are all millennials, and with everything going on, there have been so many millennials who have moved back in with their parents who maybe have differing political views, and it's hard to have conversations. What would you suggest that everybody do to become better listeners and to not have these big fights since we're all spending more time together?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, the first thing Chris and I would recommend is, to the extent you can, just don't always talk about politics.
Chris, that's a good solution. The simplest.
We found that we were happier and healthier as friends when we talked about the things that we both loved and cared about and got to go to those sort of deeper connections. If you do talk about politics, and my family talks politics all the time, that's pretty much every dinner conversation growing up and today. I think Chris and I had three kind of experiences that we would recommend for other people. The first is that whenever we entered a conversation, hoping to change the other person's mind, thinking that, you know, if we just had the right argument, they'll change their opinion. Those conversations never really ended well, because I don't think we ever really enter conversations with that kind of openness to have our minds changed. And so those conversations end up being these tit for tat political sparring matches where everyone's just kind of waiting for their chance to say their next point. And they're not really internalizing whatever it is you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so entering a conversation instead with the idea of having, you know, an open conversation, getting to hear someone else's views and thinking, well, I might actually learn something that'll make my own ideas better, is a much better approach to those kind of conversations. Second is to have some humility about what the other side might think. I think every time we entered a conversation, assuming that the other must believe X because they're a Republican, or they must believe Y because they're a Democrat, we often turned out to be wrong. But when we applied those labels to each other and assumed those positions, it made us feel a bit defensive for our parties. And so I ended up, you know, arguing as a Republican instead of arguing as myself, because I was responding to the charge I was hearing from the other side. And so just having some humility about what the other side might think. And then third and finally is we found that our conversations were much better and we can engage more deeply when we learn to look at each other as something other than Republicans and Democrats. So, you know, for me, my most powerful and my proudest identity is as a Marine. And whenever Chris looked at me as a Marine, I think it was easier for him to accept why I would reject the charge that America is fundamentally racist. Because I wanted to believe that, you know, having served this country and watching my friends serve this country, that there's something noble about it, and I didn't want to hear it talked down to. And it was easier for me to hear Chris explain his views when I looked at him as a journalist, as someone who really wanted to go to the scene and to tell things as they were, not some sort of patriotic version of what things are. And as a result, we learned to kind of probe for those deeper experiences that we think shape how people come at these issues. And when you look for those experiences, it becomes a much richer conversation than just a simple kind of political back and forth.
Chris?
Yeah, I would only add that it's important to keep coming back to the table. We had that advantage of when we were fighting about something out in the middle of a desert in Nevada, and we decided, screw this, I don't want to do this anymore. We couldn't exactly pull the car over and walk away because we were hundreds of miles away from civilization. So we were at an advantage where we couldn't walk away. And we had to come back to the table. And that was possibly the best tonic we could find for our division, because it made us say, okay, you know, I'm angry. Why am I angry? Simmer down, you know, kind of go through that process, say, okay, well, maybe I can, you know, understand something of what he's saying. And then slowly say, look, I might still disagree, but, and this was the most powerful thing we have ever said to each other, which is, I love you, man. I love you, even though I disagree with you. And, you know, just give me a minute, or let's talk about this again tomorrow. And so being able to come back to the table, I think, is crucial. And I think Jordan might have mentioned this, but you're not going to solve any, you know, all problems and sort of agree, you know, over one Thanksgiving dinner, or even one, you know, cup of coffee. So it's about coming back, and it's about keep trying. And to your context, I think it's really important that families keep trying, because if there's ever a time to keep coming back to the table, it's with family.
How do you think the pandemic is changing this country?
That's a good question. I think as Chris and I have thought about it the past few months, I think some of the things we already saw happening in the country are getting exacerbated, and it's accelerating some of the changes that were already underway. You know, as an example, I think Americans were already self-segregating by beliefs, by ideology, by religion, and that process is going to be, I think, accelerated now, especially as people start moving away from cities. It's easier to work remotely. The pull towards finding like-minded communities will be stronger. I think the isolation will also increase as a result of the pandemic. But on the other hand, I think we're also seeing, again, this resurgence of this sort of uniquely American entrepreneurial spirit. I was so impressed in March and April when, as everyone kind of realized the scope of the pandemic, seeing people from everywhere just try to get in the game and help the country and help their communities. And you had scientists rushing to create infection tests or vaccines. You had local organizations finding ways to donate goods, and entrepreneurs across the board just coming up with new ideas for how to solve problems. And I think that's very inspiring. And my hope is that as we come out of the pandemic, that will be what really helps us get back on our feet more than anything.
Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I think accelerating is the key word. I think that the problems are getting much worse, but so is the spirit of renewal of let's roll up our sleeves and take this issue on head first. I was in New York when the pandemic when the shelter in place came down, and I was blown away that starting at 7 every night, where I was living in Brooklyn, the air would just be full of thousands of people making as much noise as possible to honor the first responders. And, it took getting out on the road, going to 44 states and meeting all these people for us to really sort of put our finger on that spirit. But there it was in one neighborhood in Brooklyn and across New York. It continued when I finally managed to get back to Berkeley and quarantine, and I could hear it through the walls. I really do think that the pandemic is obviously a terrible tragedy, but if anything, we're going to be able to hopefully meet it with an equal sum of renewal and passion for what the future can hold.
We have a question for both of you. At the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson, since our show is called Nobody Told Me. So for both of you, what did nobody tell you guys about seeing the other side to really anything in life that you wish that they had?
That's a really good question. My first thought was, no one told me how early Marines get up. But that's not exactly to your question. We would be on the road at 4:30 a.m. some days if we wanted to see a sunrise. No, but my real answer would be no one told me how humbling it is. And I mean that in a positive sense. No one told me how vast the world can be when you actually have people of other belief systems and other experiences, in your best friend circle. It opens up whole new vistas of understanding and lines of inquiry and thinkers. I'd say that.
Good stuff.
Jordan?
I think my answer is nobody told me how comforting it is to have a best friend. And there's not that much written on male friendship. And growing up, I've always had great friends. I've had great college friends and buddies from the Marine Corps who I know would do anything for me. But Chris and I talk almost every day because of this book. And after spending that much time in a car together, I think we really got to know each other at such a deep level that I feel like I could tell him anything and have no risk that he'll judge me, that he'll pull away. And it's just the most comforting thing in the world to have someone I know I could trust and lean on like that. So that's definitely the fruits of our 3 years on the road together.
Oh, wow, so that's beautiful. That's wonderful. Yeah. How can people connect with you guys on social media and the internet? Do you have a website or how can people connect?
Yeah, we have a website. It's unionthebook.com. You can find us on Twitter, but you might not like what you find. We're not the biggest social media people, but we're working on it. @C_Ha, and Jordan, I think, is just @JordanBlaschek. Is that right?
Right.
Man, that's prime real estate. But yeah, that's where you can find us.
One other thing. Aren't you guys really blown away by the amount of praise that you have gotten from absolutely
top people?
Yeah. Talk about humbling.
Yeah, I bet. Well, it's a world. It's a fantastic book, and we really thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences with us.
Well, thank you. This was, I think, one of our most fun interviews. So
oh, good.
Yeah, you guys are great.
We'll take that. Our thanks again to Jordan Blaschek and Christopher Haw. Their book is called Union, A Democrat, A Republican, and A Search for Common Ground. And their website is unionthebook.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.